Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have updates on coronavirus, including the state child abuse and neglect hotline, a new drive-through COVID-19 testing clinic, and what's going on with the beef market. It's Tuesday, April 7th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl.
With Montana News, I'm Corin Cates Carney.
And I'm Nikki Ouellette. As of 7 p.m. Monday, Montana is reporting 319 known cases of the COVID-19 illness caused by the novel coronavirus. 27 people have been hospitalized and 6 people have died.
Last week, we talked about a projection about hospital resource needs and deaths from COVID-19 in Montana. This was from the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, an independent population health research center at University of Washington Medicine. IHME updated its projections over the weekend. And Nikki, can you break down what it said?
Yeah, IHME is now pegging Montana's peak resource need on April 13th.
And can you remind me on what the original projections were?
The update moves the peak resource need and highest death count day up from April 25th or 26th, so it's about 12 days sooner. They're now projecting up to 5 deaths around April 17th. That's actually down from up to 15 deaths on April 25th. The previous prediction said 270 people could die by August in Montana. Now they're saying it's more like 22 people might die. The previous projection said the state would be short on intensive care unit beds by 44 and that we would need 103 ventilators. And they're now saying we actually have enough beds and only 7 ventilators will be needed. So Montana is pretty much in line with national peaks in terms of the days. Corin, I should say there's a pretty huge caveat with these predictions. All of these projections are assuming that full social distancing measures, school closures, travel bans, stay-at-home orders, all of those will be in effect through May of this year.
And Montana's closure orders that you mentioned are currently set to expire Friday.
Yes, although they're likely to be extended.
So some caveats there, but still some pretty dramatic shifts on what the forecast is for COVID-19 in Montana.
For Montana, yes. At the national level, those projections stayed pretty much the same. We're still seeing peak hospitalizations on April 15th. The peak number of deaths per day on April 16th. We are still seeing national level shortages of hospital beds somewhere in the 36,000, intensive care units in the 16,000 range, and a shortage of ventilators by about 25,000. Something interesting here, though, is Wyoming's projection actually were worse than the previous release, which is kind of unusual. In the original projection, Wyoming was predicted to have 2 to 7 deaths on its peak day on May 5th. They're now predicting 0 to 27 deaths on April 29th and 119 deaths by August.
So what's behind these changes?
IHME has shifted up its model. They're including new data from states that are a little farther into this than Montana is to look at hospitalization rates and true those numbers up. For the death estimates, they're also looking at how long it took between cities in other countries implemented their social distancing policies to the peak number of deaths. The original model was only looking at cities in China. This newer update looks at cities in Spain and Italy. The peaks in deaths came sooner after those social distancing measures were implemented. Also, the model is looking at policies that state governments have implemented for social distancing and weighing those differently. So, you know, IHME says that models usually true up over time as more data becomes available. They say that's happening here. But another huge disclaimer, they say, quote, the pandemic's trajectory would change and dramatically for the worse if people ease up on social distancing. And again, they're assuming social distancing happening through May.
So what's your takeaway from this update?
Everyone is still learning about this virus as we go along. Estimates about how deadly it is have changed frequently. We're still getting a sense of how long hospitalization stays are on average, and also looking at, you know, you're in the hospital, but are you in an ICU? Are you on a ventilator? All of those numbers are still revealing themselves. Montana is usually an outlier on these types of national predictions because we just don't fit the model. We don't have enough data points for us to make sense in the algorithm that they've come up with. And again, this projection is only through the first wave. And pretty much every health professional we've spoken to says we're likely to see another round of coronavirus later this year.
This projection was built with the idea to help hospitals plan for potential, the influx of patients they might see. And it's been referenced by the White House Coronavirus Task Force. Are local public health officials in Montana changing what they're doing?
If anything, counties here in Montana are gearing up for a longer-term response.
How so?
So Missoula, for example, they just started a new drive-in testing site dedicated for first responders, hospital workers, and at-risk people over 65. In Gallatin County, a group of nonprofits have formed an association called the Southwest Montana COAD to raise money and help organize disaster relief efforts. And then Yellowstone County late last week announced that it's breaking up its incident command into three branches. So community care, community response, and economic response and recovery, which signals to me they're kind of in this for the long haul. Yellowstone County also started a mobile testing unit for long-term and residential care facilities. They've opened a shelter for people who are COVID positive or suspected COVID positive and who are currently experiencing homelessness. And they've also upped their donation drive, asking for masks, gowns, hand sanitizers, even thermometers. They're also asking for volunteers with expertise in the healthcare field.
One last quick update. The State Health Department lab is making some changes to how it communicates new tests and cases in Montana. The map, the online map it maintains, will only be updated once a day now between 9 and 10 a.m. Health officials say they're reformatting the map and say it'll work better on mobile phones.
And they're also going to post a number that I've really been looking forward to, the number of recovered patients. Those changes start this morning.
Thanks, Nikki.
Thanks, Corin.
Montana is now reporting 319 known cases of the novel coronavirus spread across 24 counties. Health officials say there are likely more patients with it who haven't been tested. The state health department says there have been 27 hospitalizations due to the virus and 6 people have died. Gallatin County remains the largest hotspot of the coronavirus in the state, with 118 cases. State health officials say calls to the state child abuse and neglect hotline have dropped by about half since schools closed their doors in mid-March due to the novel coronavirus outbreak. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports health officials are asking neighbors and families to report abuse or neglect as children learn from home.
The Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services says in recent weeks, the hotline has received a little over half of the roughly 760 weekly calls that came in before schools were ordered on March 15th to close their doors. Governor Steve Bullock has ordered schools to move online until April 10th, but he's indicated the timeline could be extended. Division Administrator for Child and Family Services, Marty Vining, says the shift to online and remote learning is likely the cause for the drop in calls.
Teachers and educators are mandatory reporters, and they probably have the most contact with children, second to families. And so they are typical mandatory reporters that we do hear and receive reports from quite frequently.
Vining hopes the number of calls from teachers and other school staff will pick up as districts get more comfortable communicating with students remotely. Lisa Clark is the counselor for Shelby Elementary, and she says the Montana Office of Public Instruction is providing guidance to counselors on how they can continue checking in with kids as schools remain closed.
On different ways to check in with kids, whether that's phone calls, letters, like a Google Doc or Google Form check-in each day.
As districts navigate checking in with students and teaching online, DPHHS child protection specialists are finding ways to work with schools, like in Glasgow, where specialists are helping deliver meals to students' homes. DPHHS is also asking community members and families to report any abuse or neglect they see by calling 1-866-820-KIDS. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Missoula health officials have announced a new drive-through COVID-19 testing clinic. It's one of several recent steps by counties in the state to step up new testing abilities to identify the novel coronavirus. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports the new Missoula site isn't open to just anyone who wants a test.
Missoula health officials tested four patients Saturday at the new drive-through test clinic at the county fairgrounds. COVID-19 incident commander Cindy Farr describes it as a dry run.
It was an opportunity for our staff and our nurses to set up the testing service and try out the drive-through idea. It went very well.
So well that Missoula County's new COVID-19 testing center opens Tuesday. But the service is only available to a very specific set of people with symptoms, including fever, coughing, and shortness of breath.
It is an appointment-based testing service, so the way it works is you call 258-INFO. You would be able to have a chance to talk with a nurse. Testing supplies are still limited. So right now we are limited to testing people that fall into the priority one and two categories.
Priority one patients include healthcare workers and existing hospital patients. Priority twos include first responders, patients in long-term care facilities, and those who are 65 years of age and older, all exhibiting symptoms. In Yellowstone County, health officials announced late last week the start of a mobile testing unit to take samples from residents at long-term care facilities. Officials say the testing van can also take samples from group homes. Health officials say they prioritize older patients for testing because adults 65 and older are at higher risk for severe illness. Drive-up testing is used in several other Montana cities, including Libby, Helena, and Bozeman. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
Montana schools are asking Governor Steve Bullock to waive requirements under a new state cybersecurity law aimed at protecting student information. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports the request comes as teachers are scrambling to move classes online.
School districts say they need more flexibility to move classes online amid the novel coronavirus pandemic, and that they're currently limited by the 2019 Montana Pupil Online Personal Information Protection Act. The law requires districts to make sure websites and software they're using to teach students aren't mining, sharing, or selling student data and information. In particular, small districts just wading into web-based learning say the law is a major barrier.
We made a full 180-degree pivot 2 weeks ago and went from basically no distance learning through now. 4 through 12 is all digital distance learning.
Alex Astor is the superintendent of Roberts School District southwest of Billings, which serves just a little over 100 students. Astor says the district chose Google Classroom for its online delivery system.
And it's just basically a really good way to share information. But in no way, shape, or form does Google Classroom provide any educational services.
To fill out their curriculum, Roberts School District teachers are flocking to a number of web-based tools. English teachers might be trying to hold discussion on video chat services, or a math teacher might want to use a website that helps determine what aspects of trigonometry a student might be struggling with. But there's a hang-up. Districts need to sift through every user agreement to make sure it complies with Montana's student data protection law. If it doesn't, districts need to get companies to sign agreements outlining protections for students before they can use a new web-based tool.
And we have great teachers that are going after this stuff, and trying to pump the brakes on people that are trying new things is discouraging in education.
The Montana Educational Technologist Association is trying to speed up that process by working with the state, which has already signed a large privacy agreement okaying districts to use Zoom video chats. School Administrators of Montana is asking Governor Bullock to give districts until July 1st to fully comply with the state's 2019 student privacy law. Bullock's office says it's looking into the request, but there are risks that come with that flexibility. So says Amelia Vance with the Future Privacy Forum, a Washington, D.C.-based think tank focused on data privacy. She says the quick jump to online learning is leading teachers and districts to consider unconventional tools.
Because the biggest privacy issue that we've seen here is that there's a lot of non-education software that's being adopted or contemplated, from webinar platforms to social media, even gaming platforms.
She adds that in recent years, many districts across the country have found that their teachers are using hundreds of online tools that weren't approved by administrators. That's only expected to get worse during the COVID-19 outbreak. A recent 2019 national survey from Common Sense Media also found issues with training teachers received.
Only 25% who participated in professional development were trained in understanding student data privacy requirements and strategies around the use of EdTech.
In Montana, many districts MTPR spoke with had different opinions on how they should be complying with current requirements under the state's student privacy law, especially smaller districts without dedicated tech departments. Dot Wood is the curriculum director at Columbia Falls Public Schools.
And so people like me who are curriculum directors or other classroom-based people are trying to figure out things sometimes without having clear guidance about what are the software adoption guidelines from the state.
Wood says the district is also worried about general cybersecurity concerns not covered under the state's student privacy law as it quickly scales up online learning. Like other Montana districts, Columbia Falls schools were hacked in 2017. Jeff Patterson is the president of K-12 Montana, which helps districts set up web-based learning systems. He says the best way to avoid that fate is to train teachers, students, and parents how to use safety features on online platforms they're using, such as Zoom. Patterson adds that bad actors can do more than just expose students to inappropriate content like pornography or racist rhetoric by gaining access to chat sessions. They can also share malicious links.
That link can actually pass your login credentials to your computer along with it to try and gain access to a resource that's secured on the other side with your username and password.
That could lead hackers right to a student's private information. Patterson says these vulnerabilities will continue to be discovered as time wears on, and he says districts need to make sure students, staff, and administrators are educated on these attacks and older scams, such as phishing emails.
We may be moving a little bit faster than we would be comfortable with, and I think it's okay for administrators to take a pause, and it's okay for teachers to say we need some support.
He says if a district isn't sure whether an online tool is being used in a safe way, it's okay to stop using that service and find another way to engage students, even if it's good old-fashioned paper packets. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Shoppers may have noticed higher beef prices and empty shelves at the grocery store last month. At the same time, cattle producers saw a significant drop in what they were getting paid. Rachel Kramer has been reporting on the effects of panic buying, allegations of price fixing, and uncertainty in the face of a global economic fallout. She spoke with Nikki Ouellette.
Rachel, thanks so much for sharing your reporting.
Thanks for having me.
Over the past month, beef prices at grocery stores nationwide have hit historic highs. Tell us what that looks like.
Right. So the box beef cutout, basically the price of all the meat products like sirloin steak, brisket, ground beef, etc., that you get from an individual steer, jumped up 25% from March 12th to the 19th. An economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation says the last time the U.S. experienced nearly the same increase was in 2017, but it was spread out over nearly a month, not 1 week. Prices are starting to come back down, but they're still higher than normal.
That's wild. Did the price jump slow down grocery store shoppers?
Well, no. Americans bought about 77% more meat in mid-March than previous years. I talked to Bill Kennedy, the meat coordinator for Town and Country Foods, which has grocery stores in Bozeman, Belgrade, and Livingston. He says TNC absorbed about two-thirds of the price increase on meat to soften the cost for customers. He says shoppers bought double the amount of ground beef and chicken breasts than they normally buy this time of year.
We can't keep up. You know, I told my guys one day, it's like, we're just done. We can't do anymore.
Experts say the U.S. doesn't have a food shortage right now. The empty shelves people have seen are the effect of shoppers buying more than they need and stores struggling to keep up. Beef production during the last week of March was actually about 14% higher than the same time a year ago.
That's interesting. So you would think that ranchers and feed yards would be benefiting from the higher retail prices and the higher demand, but prices for cattle actually dropped about 30% in March. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are frustrated that there seems to be this mismatch. Groups like the Montana Stock Growers Association, Montana Farm Bureau, and Montana Farmers Union, along with Montana's Attorney General Tim Fox and Senators John Tester and Steve Daines, are urging the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Department of Justice to investigate possible market manipulation and a breach of antitrust laws. Here's Walter Schweitzer, president of the Montana Farmers Union.
In the last month, coronavirus put a microscope on the livestock cattle market, and it's broken.
Four multinational companies, Tyson Foods, JBS, Cargill, and National Beef Packing, control 80% of all the cattle slaughtered in the U.S. Before COVID-19, the beef packers already faced litigation and a Department of Agriculture investigation for alleged collusion, price manipulation, restrictions of competition, and other unfair practices. The USDA's investigation is still ongoing. Nicole Rolfe is the Director of National Affairs with the Montana Farm Bureau Federation.
Companies are subject to antitrust laws, and we hope that agencies like the USDA will go to bat for, you know, Montana farmers and American farmers and ranchers, make sure that all players in these markets are playing by the rules.
Secretary of Ag Sonny Perdue said on Twitter 2 weeks ago that the agency is, quote, paying special attention to the difference in prices from the farm gate to the grocery shelf.
So it sounds like this could be intentional. Are there other possible explanations for the high beef prices and low cattle prices?
Michael Nevue, a Farm Bureau economist, thinks it has more to do with cattle futures on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
What's a cattle future?
Basically, someone offers a price now for cattle that will be sent to a feed yard or packing plant later. Nevue says people expect a recession is going to hit a couple months down the road, which means people won't buy as much beef because it's considered more of a luxury item. So cattle futures are lower now, even though current demand and retail values are high.
It doesn't always work the way people think it should, and I think that's a lot of frustration for a lot of producers sometimes, because it does have a direct impact on their bottom line.
Nevue says something else that's causing uncertainty with the beef market are isolated cases of meatpacking plants shutting down for a few weeks or running below capacity because of COVID-19. The JBS meatpacking plant in Greeley, Colorado is one of the largest in the country with more than 4,000 employees. But after reports of workers testing positive for the coronavirus, hundreds of employees stayed home last week.
How long are these packing plants going to continue to run if they keep having workers not able to show up either because they get sick, they have kids who are forced to stay home from school and they have nowhere to take them, so they can't leave their kids alone and go to work. It's a lot of this going on. It's just created just this mountain of uncertainty that's really hard for the markets to work through right now.
The U.S. beef market has seen big fluctuations in the past decade, but the impact of COVID-19 has pushed the industry onto a thrill level 5 roller coaster with no end in sight.
Oh my goodness, that sounds so dire. What are Montana ranchers saying about this?
Wyatt Donald is part of a multi-generational, family-owned cow-calf and stocker operation in Melville, north of Big Timber. Like many ranchers in Montana, the Donald family sells their weaned cattle in the fall, so COVID-19 isn't affecting his family's operation yet, but...
We anticipate it to. We don't obviously know what cattle prices are going to be in September, but there's just so many really crazy things going on right now.
Donald says they can't control a global pandemic or cattle prices, so they're trying to focus on what's in front of them, the upcoming calving season, the health of their rangelands, the relationships they have with vendors and other people in the supply chain, and succession planning.
I was just talking to my brother today, and we were saying that it's nice working with livestock because it just keeps going. You know, they need to be moved, or, you know, some of them need to be fed every day, and that allows us some sense of normalcy, and where, you know, a lot of other people, they're just totally turned upside down, and our hearts go out to those people.
Well, Rachel, thank you for sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks, Nikki.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.